Hey there, welcome to the Creative Classroom Podcast. I'm your host, John Spencer. I'm a former middle school teacher, current college professor, and I am passionate about seeing teachers transform their classrooms into bastions of creativity and wonder. And so on this podcast, I share ideas and strategies. I talk about things that work, but also those big epic fails that I've made along the way. I interview experts, I share protocols, and all because I believe teachers play a profound role in helping their students reach their creative potential. And so we talk about student-centered learning, we talk about deeper learning, we talk about project-based learning, all kinds of learning in that domain of creativity. And when we think about creative thinking, we don't always think about something like today's topic, which is Socratic seminars, but it is truly a student-centered way of doing conversations. And I genuinely believe that creative thinking often involves creative dialogue and thinking in a deep, nuanced way about topics and subjects and materials you're reading and all kinds of things like that. So today we're going to be talking about this idea of Socratic seminars and how we can design them in a way where all students can participate. And if you haven't done so yet, please sign up for my weekly newsletter. You can find it. Sign up at the very bottom of my website. It is spencereducation.com, and you'll get my latest podcasts and articles and all kinds of free resources sent straight to your inbox each week, usually on Thursdays. All right, without further ado, let's jump right in. Socratic seminars are a democratic, student-centered approach to class discussions. You can use them at any grade level, and I have seen them as early as kindergarten or first grade, although they look very different at that grade level, and with any subject area. Although they do tend to skew more toward the humanities, you can absolutely use them in science and in math. And in a Socratic seminar, what you typically see is that members meet in a circle. And honestly, it's more likely to be an oval because, let's be honest, perfect circles are very hard to create. And in the circle, people share their insights. Participants do not raise their hands. You do not call on names. You do not have a teacher in charge. Because there's no discussion leader, each member can comment or ask follow-up questions to one another. And this approach tends to be really empowering. Unlike a typical class discussion, the conversation moves fluidly back and forth rather than having to go through the teacher. So rather than like this spoken wheel, you have this interconnected web. So what you're really seeing is this idea of a democratic, small d, democratic, I want to be clear, conversation in a way that's very student-centered. All right, so why would you use Socratic seminars? Well, the Socratic method isn't exactly new. It's been around since, well, Socrates. Actually, it probably predates Socrates. There's good reason to believe that it was actually centuries before Socrates, but he gets the credit for essentially starting the Socratic method. And it has been valuable for thousands of years. I think it's important to recognize that sometimes older methods are actually more relevant because they reveal the deeply human skills that we sometimes need in a world of AI and machine learning and things like that. Often the most innovative approaches take these classic classic ideas and re-envision them in light of a new context. We end up with the overlap of best practices and next practices. And such is the case with Socratic seminar. We can think about it as being an example of what I like to call vintage innovation, that new way of doing things, but also that embraces certain lo-fi, classical, deeply human ideas. So when students engage in Socratic seminars, what they're developing are these human skills that they're going to use for the rest of their life. They engage in critical thinking and learn how to see truth as nuanced and complex. They learn how to speak up boldly and how to listen with empathy. What appears on the surface to be, well, a messy conversation is actually an opportunity to develop the skills that they're going to need in a democratic society. So yeah, Socratic seminars are valuable in terms of life. They're valuable in terms of jobs. They're valuable in terms of understanding information as well. From a purely academic standpoint, Socratic seminars are a great opportunity to engage in what's called retrieval practice and a way to make connections between ideas. So there's these synaptic connections going on in the brain back and forth in a way that solidifies the learning. In the process, the skills become more firmly developed, but the knowledge itself, the content knowledge that they're learning, is able to move from short-term to long-term memory, and it becomes essentially stickier. But there's a risk that certain people will dominate the conversation, and quieter participants won't speak up. It can be tricky for introverts who need additional processing time. It can be challenging for ELL students who need language supports. Moreover, members of marginalized groups might be reluctant to share their thoughts if they feel like others won't understand it. That's why I'd like to explore some ways that we can design Socratic seminars so that every student can thrive and participate. In general, when we think about Socratic seminars, there's going to be key features. Socratic seminars typically have the following four components. And this varies based upon your model, but this is what we typically see. Students ask and answer the questions while the teacher remains silent. Students sit in a circle facing one another. There is neither the raising of hands nor the calling of names. It's a free-flowing process. So it's going to move in this very organic kind of way. The best discussions are more explanatory and open-ended rather than cut and dry debates. You really try to avoid like just straight up binary thinking. While a question might lead to a persuasive thought, the goal should be to examine points of view and construct deeper meaning rather than arguing two different binary options. So in general, those are the components. Now, if that's the way that you're going to do Socratic seminar, let's think about what approach you might use. And there's a few different ways. The giant circle approach. Students sit together in a large circle. Desks are pushed back all the way, so there's no physical barriers. There is no front of the room in this, and students have an ongoing conversation. Now, this is fantastic in terms of a way to design it, but this particular approach can be really challenging in terms of making sure all students get a chance to participate. So the next option is the fishbowl, and this is really popular. You have an inner circle and an outer circle. And in the inner circle, students do the Socratic seminar, but the outside circle, students are taking notes, they're writing down key ideas. They might even have the opportunity in some cases to ask some clarifying questions, and then you flip-flop who's, you change who's on the inside and on the outside. This is a great model for students who are expert listeners and really shows that learning how to listen is also a great skill. It can also be good for students who are practicing English because they might be able to sort of watch and listen. And, we think about oral language development. Listening is part of that. The next one is the roundtable approach. Unlike the fishbowl, students gather around a single round table. It doesn't have to be round. I mean, truly, it could be a rectangular table. But this allows them to lean in and discuss ideas. It's great if there's sort of close proximity and body language. I would say the roundtable approach should be done with small groups. If you have a class of 10, it's perfect. If you have a class of 20, not so much. But it's also really good for students who need access to what they've written. If you have students who need to rehearse what they've said, sometimes ELL students, sometimes introverted students, sometimes students who are neurodivergent, this roundtable approach gives them an opportunity to look at what they've written. The next one is a scattered approach. This is something where students sit kind of kindergarten style in a laid back way. They're all around the classroom. There's no circle. It's whoever wants to speak, speaks. Whoever doesn't, doesn't have to. It's just much more scattered and organic. And I found that this can work well in some cases for classrooms that need to really kind of practice being a little bit more informal. If they're feeling kind of some anxiety about a discussion, it makes it just more comfortable. It's my least favorite version because it's so unstructured. I love this next one, which is multiple seminars. Here you break a larger group into 2 to 4 Socratic seminars, and you, as a teacher, walk around and monitor each group. This can feel challenging to manage, but it can allow for lots of students to participate. And I found that introverted students tend to enjoy this approach because they're only talking to 4 students or 6 students. And the same thing is true of ELL students. If they have what's called a high affective filter, it reduces that affective filter and allows them to participate. There's also online, offline seminars. With this option, half the class engages on a discussion in a virtual forum, while others have the Socratic seminar in person. And again, this can be great for students who are introverted and need a chance to practice. It can be great for students who need access to sentence stems and the freedom to type what they're doing. But I think it's important to recognize you lose something when it is written. A variation of this would be the graffiti wall activity, where you essentially have ongoing Socratic seminars around whiteboards or chart paper, and students silently write their ideas and jot their ideas down in this ongoing conversation in that way as well. So as you think about your approach, we can then move into the process, the Socratic seminar process. And in general, you're going to have different phases. So phase one is where you explain the process. You explain the Socratic seminar structure ahead of time. This includes elements that might feel different. Letting them know what the norms look like ahead of time, which moves us right there to phase number 2, setting the tone. And, you know, you might have things like keep the language respectful, avoid insults and put downs, or be clear and truthful, you know, listen intently. I think it's important to recognize, as we think about this idea of norms, though, that the norms should promote a positive environment. But we want to be cognizant in the zone of, like, every student participates, that we don't have norms that accidentally stigmatize students. So I don't love the norm, for example, use eye contact. If you have a student with autism, they might not want to use a ton of eye contact during the Socratic seminar. And you know what? That's totally fine. They can be respectful and engage in a dialogue without having to stare at people the entire time. So, you know, I think it's important that we are careful with the kind of norms that we use. In the next phase, phase 3, we prepare for the discussion. You might have a starting provocation. It could be a concept attainment lesson, a science lesson, social studies lesson. It could be a little experiment that you run. It might be a problem that you solve. Often it's going to be a mentor text or a podcast or a video. We tend to see that as sort of an anchor text as well. If you're using a mentor text, you might use a structure like a connect, extend, challenge. From Making Thinking Visible. It's a fantastic book that I highly recommend. Or you might start with something like a graphic organizer. From there, you lead into deeper analysis. You know, what's the main idea? How is the text constructed? What's the tone? What's the bias? You get the idea. You then move into the actual Socratic seminar. So phase 4 is begin the Socratic seminar. And option 1 is you start with a mentor text and some sample questions. Option 2, you can start with a driving question, like what is the purpose of blank? What role does blank? Should blank? You get the idea. Phase five is when you then begin to broaden the discussion. This is when students are going to be asking more questions of each other, sharing more ideas, and it becomes a much more free-flowing conversation. In phase six, as you sort of close this up, you clarify and close. I love the following questions as sort of ending discussion questions. Are there any questions you still have? Is there anything that feels unsettled or unclear? What was a key takeaway for you? And then phase number seven is the debrief. This is when students individually reflect on things like, what was this experience like for you? Did you feel understood by your peers? What were some points that challenged your thinking? And then you might even do a pair share or a whole class debrief as well. So how do we ensure that all students can participate? What happens if one student dominates the discussion? One option is to give what are called talking chips so that they don't speak too many times. Another option is to speak into the group and interrupt the discussion by asking, is there anyone who has not spoken up who wants to share something? Designing something that allows for a monitoring of either time or turns really make sure that every student is getting that opportunity. What if a student doesn't participate at all? You might have require all students to participate at some point. You could allow students to have pre-written statements if they're uncomfortable with the seminar structure. But it's also important that active listening is considered a form of participation. And you know what? Sometimes quieter students might actually be highly engaged and they don't have to speak up as often as other students. That we don't want to just allow them to not talk at all, but maybe talking less is okay in some cases. What about the introverts who need more processing time? Well, we want to allow for 3 to 5 minutes of think time. You can take stops or break points in the middle of Socratic seminars and say, all right, I want you to stop, jot down some questions. I want you to take a thinking break. There's all kinds of ways that you can allow for individual processing time. What about ELL students who need to access the language? You can and should front load vocabulary. You can do a mini lesson for them. You can look at verb tenses. You could also do sentence stems. I love using sample sentence, question stems, answers stems, clarifying question stems, all kinds of stems that students can essentially use, and they fill in the blank and they can then access the language and participate in a way that allows every student to be on the same like level playing field. Not every student needs sentence stems. I wouldn't require it of an entire class, but for many English learners, it's a powerful tool to help them access the language. In the end, what I'll say is this. Socratic seminars are a fantastic, powerful structure, but they require exactly that structure. They might look chaotic, but careful planning is so critical. But when we plan it in a way that allows every student to participate, they become more empowered individually and as a community, and that tends to lead to deeper learning. Hey, thank you so much for listening to this podcast. Would you do me a favor if you enjoy it? Would you tell a colleague or friend, probably a colleague, a friend would be so weird to just tell a random friend, but would you tell a friend about it? Word of mouth is still one of the best ways for people to find out about this podcast. Also, leave a review on Apple Podcasts or on Spotify or wherever you get your podcasts. And don't forget to click the little subscribe thing. That'll guarantee it shows up in your feed. Again, thank you so much for listening. Have a wonderful day and go out and make something awesome.